You are now listening to Out of the Blank.
Welcome to another episode of Out of the Blank podcast. I'm going to start it off a little bit differently, but I'm with George.
Hey, what's going on?
So, George, I came across your podcast. It says the Florida podcast. I'm thinking, oh my God, he's probably talking about the crazy, extravagant stuff that comes out of Florida. Then I'm seeing your tweets and I'm like, this guy is not like the stereotypical Florida. And I'm like, was I programmed to think that Florida is this crazy place? And it's not, because there are people like you that make it better.
Yes. I believe so. The thing is that Florida's population has grown exponentially since I was a kid. My hometown of Tallahassee, for instance, when I was born, I think it was probably about a third the size of it is right now. And if I'm not mistaken, I would say probably about a quarter of Florida's population was actually born in our state. So the people who have moved here are unfortunately what I call the leftovers from the rest of the country and beyond, for that matter. But yeah.
Gender reveal video where they take a ball and they put it into an alligator's mouth and the alligator breaks it and they figure out what gender, which I just saw the other day. There are people like you that are kind of like, they're not the stereotypical. And I started to realize that I might have been programmed by everything you see on news or everything you see like this to think that it's this crazy, crazy place. And I'm like, it's not really, because like this happened. If you would think, I'm going to give you an example. The South, when I say the example of the South, the stereotypical things like shoo-dang and then this kind of like country style thing. Did you know that was all a stereotypical thing because they didn't know what the real aspect of what was going on there? In the day they came across people in the South or in this region, they called them slower because these people seemed to be fatigued. They seemed to be kind of like zombie-ish. And it turns out it was all because of a tapeworm. There was this tapeworm that was ravaging the South, and all these people that were coming over started being like, well, is it just slower here? Are these people just not as evolved as we are? No, it was because of a tapeworm. And I'm like, fuck, maybe everything, like maybe, maybe Coke's not evil. Maybe it's actually pretty good. I don't know.
Well, I don't know if I would go that far, but I mean, I think that it's certainly worth looking into. I think that there's a lot of negative stereotypes that come about with Florida, especially because of, when the Cubans came over and when they started Miami, they say that Miami is a city that's built on cocaine money. And so
that's movies, as such, bro.
Everybody who lives in Miami must be on cocaine. That's something that I ran into when I was in college. You know, it was like I moved down to Miami because I'm Hispanic and I was born in Tallahassee and I wanted to be in a place where I actually would fit in. And so I moved down to Miami and then like suddenly I started treated like I was completely different. Just because I'm in a different place in Florida, and people started treating me like I was some type of a drug addict when I had never even touched cocaine. And it was just, it was very interesting to understand how media plays a huge role in everything. And, it's not all roses here either. I'm not going to like pretend like Florida is like, that Florida has the greatest history. And part of it is a very strong disconnect of what the history has been taught as far as America is concerned. One of the big misconceptions is that like people call Florida a slave state, which, you know, it can be seen that way. However, like in our 500, 600 years that we've been like with European influence in Florida, we've only had legalized slavery for about 40 of those years. If you think about it all together, that doesn't really identify to me as a slave state. But what happened was when Andrew Jackson invaded, he brought the slave owners of Georgia with him because they were upset about the fact that Florida was a slave haven, was a haven for runaway slaves. And so essentially what they did, you know, we were the first part of the Underground Railroad. It actually went south first. And that's part of what I reveal in my podcast and a bunch of my Black History Month episodes that I did. Talks about Mossé, which is the first free Black slave settlement in North America. It was actually in Florida. And people don't know that because we're not taught about it, because we're taught a very Anglo-centric perspective. Now, it's not to say that the Spaniards aren't white too. It's just saying that we're only getting the Anglo-white perspective. And there's a bunch more white perspectives out there as far as the different countries are concerned. And we're just only listening to one country.
Now, is the point of your podcast to be able to show people that Florida is not what a lot of things pointed out to be? It's a little bit more deeper than that. And if it is, what's a good couple of things that you could tell me, for instance? Because like for me, I was like, I'm my grandmom's from Florida. Like I've been there multiple times. But even now, like I'm seeing accounts of like people that do true crime podcasts talk about everyone's got a Florida man thing. I mean, that was a thing on the internet. You could type in your birth date, type in Florida man after it, and there's a crime that goes with it. And I'm like, I think you can find that in a lot of places. I'm from Ocean City, Maryland, and a lot of people relate to us with crabs. They relate to us with, like, I mean, opioids were getting big down here. So people talk about that too as being an issue. And I'm like, you probably have some pretty good information you could tell me that could change my mind on, like, Florida's not what you think it is.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and that's a big thing about Florida man is that the other states are taking advantage of Florida's broad public records law. We have one of, if not probably the most broad public records law in the country, which means that like pretty much anything becomes a public record. And that includes the governor's emails. So like you can request anything that the state does or anything that is done with the state with pretty much anybody.
There's a good and a bad to that too. The good is that you get to see anything that happens.
Man, aspect of it. That's the bad. That's part of the bad of it, is that that means that you can then become exposed to all kinds of different things because, you know, the media then takes advantage of it.
That kind of gets that. I mean, I honestly would prefer to live in a state where I could be able to ask any questions and be able to get the answers to stuff. I mean, even if it's bad stuff too, I would like to know that this is going on. You know, this is a thing. Because how many times, like, you're out in public or something and somebody says, "Hey, did you hear what happened in this in Florida?" And you're like, "I didn't hear about that." But now that you're telling me, it's like, I didn't have anything to be able to back myself. I have nothing to be able to support my idea of where I live. Because I think the whole reason people always talk about, why do you have to be born in America to be president? And I'm like, it's because their idea is they want you to have a sense of compassion because you live and you were born in this place. You're going to be so protective over everything about it. That's their idea. That's like that with states. When you're from a state, if somebody shits on Maryland, I get upset because I was born here. It's a resemblance. It's a part of me. So you take that as a self-defense type thing.
Yep. I'm the same way. I love Florida. Like I said, I was born here. I was born in North Florida, of all places. You know, my dad is from Queens and my mom is from Philadelphia. And so growing up, I was known as the Yank. And I wasn't, they said, "You're not white, you're not Black, you're not Mexican. What are you?" That was like one of the things growing up. It wasn't, you know, when I was growing up in the 90s, in the early 90s, I'm a millennial, and things were a lot different as far as like racial relations are concerned. And I took it upon myself to bring forward the lessons of yesterday because of the fact that my mother grew up in a segregated neighborhood in Philadelphia. which, you know, is like, that's a big, another big common misconception is that, you know, after the civil rights era, the slave owning states, they were forced by the federal government to atone in many ways that the Union states never had to do. And as such, we have these types of now really interesting and quite volatile types of racial relations in the North and in Northern cities that's really plaguing them right now. And now the South is now, as they really wanted to push over, was rising up again. And it's pretty much, you know, working as they planned, as far as it's concerned, you know. But I'm not saying that as like a racist type of thing, but I'm saying this as the South is rising because we've been forced to atone for all of our, you know, various racial inequities and stuff. And we're able to, in a matter of a societal structure, be able to find ways to change it in ways that places in the North, it's going to take a lot longer for them to get over a lot of the structural racism than it will in the South. I think that the way that we're going to solve a lot of racial inequities is going to come from Southern district courts and not from district courts in the North.
It's very, very crazy because the way that we're trying to aspire to get change is also by pushing blame on a single place. And I don't believe the blame should be placed on a single place. I believe it's an aspect of what it is all over. I mean, they always consider, if you're going to think of an idea state of where, you know, a certain ethnicity wouldn't be allowed, it's like, we got to go to Texas because Texas, they don't let any of that stuff fly. And it's like, well, that's not Texas at all. This idea that, like, I think it's been programmed into our heads that reds think this way, blues think this way. And I'm like, we're all fucking people at the basic down factor to it. And it's like trying to push a blame or trying, it all goes with the media, man. I get so freaking upset when I look at the media and they're showing you different things. And I'm like, it's all about how they word shit. There are certain words that they say where it's like, why did you just tell me that detail? Like giving you all the information of like, well, it was a black man that was shot. It's like, it's a man that was shot. What are you doing? Like, but it starts pushing this aspect of things where it's like anything that turns out to be crazy, like man gets into fight with crocodile or alligator, it pops up being a white man that looks like he's on meth. And I'm like, okay, you're now stereotypicalizing, and everyone starts painting these pictures in their head because that's what everyone likes to do, is they like to try and figure out, well, then that means everybody of this is this, everybody of that is that. If you're from Florida, you live in this crazy place. And I'm like, I think there's amazing things about Florida. I think there's amazing things about every state. But if you're just going to look at the crazy shit, honestly, I think it's the alligator thing that gets a lot of people like, oh, well, that's a crazy place to live.
And the people who mess with the alligators or the people who don't understand alligators are the people who aren't from Florida.
It's the same thing here with foxes. People mess with foxes. And I'm like, you're fucking nuts. Like, people are like, but they're so cute. I'm like, they make screams. You're in the middle of whatever. And all you hear is, ah, ah. And you're like, what the fuck is that? But people, I also think it's scary to a lot of people because depending on where you're located in the United States or wherever you're located in the country, it's not a known species there. So when you do go there, like for us, for instance, hearing about snakes, hearing about giant great white sharks, it's a little bit out of the norm from what we're used to on an everyday basis. So when you look at a place like Australia that has a lot of those things, we go, oh my God, you must be hard as hell if you're from Australia. It's like, well, they live there and they probably don't experience it as much as we're hyping it up in our heads for it to be.
Right. Yeah. And typically the most frightening ones are the ones who are more frightened of you. And what they're doing is actually a fear response, moreover than like them trying to hurt you or trying to go after you or kill you or eat you. It's more like them fearing you.
What's one thing you've learned about the state that you live in that you've really kind of been like, that's really fucking interesting? Like, I didn't know the reason why we in Baltimore, we have the Raven as our mascot for our football team is because of Edgar Allan Poe. I had no fucking clue about that.
Huh. Yeah. I think that one of the more interesting things that I've come across was Florida's war with Georgia. If you didn't know that happened.
I had no clue.
But yeah. There was a point in time where Florida was literally at war with Georgia and the Carolina colonies. This is back during the when they were colonies. And there were possessions of Britain versus the possessions of Spain. It's called the War of Jenkins' Ear, which is tied to, I believe it's the 30 Years' War. But that's just that's a big part of the story of Mossé, the first freed Black slave settlement. And the first free Black general of Florida is Francisco Menendez, and he was from the colony of Mossé. And he was a runaway slave from South Carolina. And essentially, he and a bunch of other people ran away and teamed up with the Gwale Indian tribe of Georgia. And they picked up people along the way, and then they formed the settlement down it's by St. Augustine. And the governor of Florida at the time converted them to Catholicism. And under the decree of the King of Spain, King Philip II, he declared Florida a freed slave colony, and like the entire state, or the entire colony, which at the time was actually the capital of Florida, was located where Charleston is today. So if you can imagine, the British, what was happening was that they kept claiming land farther and farther south, and Spain was so spread out all over the world at the time that they didn't have the resources to defend all their claims around the world. And so Britain was like, you know, they pretty much challenged them, and they were able, that's how they got a lot of their claims in the Americas, is that Spain actually claimed a lot of the land, I think up to Maryland. And then England, they just kept going, encroaching farther and farther south. And so Spain declared Georgia an illegal colony, and as such, you know, we had a war with James Oglethorpe, and because the runaway, like the slaves of Georgia, kept running away, and so they wanted to come back to their property, and so the runaway slaves would then seek safe haven either with the Free Black Militia or with the Tamuqua tribe or the Apalachee tribe, different tribes of the Seminole, which is why the Seminoles were so hated by the slave owners, because the Seminole would be custodians of runaway slaves.
Does it ever get frustrating for you, not only like looking through your history and seeing kind of like, because there is probably, much like most states, probably has a little bit of a dark past to it, but does it ever get like a little bit difficult, because especially with people like seeing it in such a different light, especially today, it's more seen as like a crazy place. I'm like, it must suck to try and convince or tell people like, I'm not that type of person. Like, I'm not this crazy person that's going to try and fight an alligator. I'm actually pretty fucking intelligent when it comes to things, because like, I'm close to Baltimore, but everybody's like, there's so many stabbings, there's so many this. I'm like, actually, it's not, I mean, yeah, it's got crime in it, but I mean, it's a heavily populated city of poverty, and it's got some problems to it, but I'm not fucking a bad guy. I'm not gonna fucking shoot somebody. It's like, but that's what people see, and then they run with their first thought or whatever they see on the news or something. And I'm like, and it also brings down to a different issue when it looks at like, people are upset about going to Florida because they're like, it's the most infected city with COVID. And I'm like, What are you fucking watching? Like, I live right next to Florida, and our biggest concern was spring breakers coming down here because I live in a beach town, so that was the thing. But I was like, we're also afraid of Virginia. We're afraid of New Jersey. We're afraid of anybody that isn't in this state because it's all these different states coming into one thing. And they're like, well, it's a cesspool in Florida. I'm like, I don't fucking think so. I've talked to plenty of friends in Florida, and besides businesses being shut down like the rest, it's not typically that bad, but everyone looks at the numbers on a screen and starts thinking the worst.
Well, I think that a large part of it also has to do with the fact that when Andrew Jackson and everybody invaded Florida, they invaded Florida with the help of the British, by the way. And I think that that's a large part of why it's so well hidden under the rug is because there are a bunch of other forces at play, and they raised a lot of those cities that what we would consider as cultured settlements or whatever. We don't have any of that because they were completely leveled. We do have it in select places like Pensacola and St. Augustine, which were the two earliest and longest lasting settlements in Florida. Both of them date back to the 1500s. And so you can still see the colonial Spanish settlements there, and you can see exactly what it looked like because it's still put up exactly the way it was. Here in Tallahassee, we have the Mission San Luis, which is this old Spanish mission that was here. A little known fact also is that the first Christmas of De Soto was here in Tallahassee. And so there's a lot of history here that that doesn't get told because it's a Spaniard history. And a lot of that has to be examined by knowing Spanish. And you know, that's another topic.
Where do you think the branch off went to? I think it's kind of started going a little bit downhill on what people's idea of what it is, rather than like they lose the history of it, because I think it also stems from like South Beach Toe, any of these like giant things that were on TV meant to be like a joking reality show. It's the same thing with New Jersey. Everyone goes, oh, that's where the Jersey Shore was. I'm like, yeah, but not everyone over there is insane like the people you see on Jersey Shore. But it's like we see a grilling show or a barbecue show from Texas or Tennessee, and we start thinking that's what the whole entire place is like, and it's not. It's something completely different. My buddy owned a limo service. His name's Josh. He actually was a fellow podcaster of mine I had on the beginning. He owned a limo service in Florida, and he talked about like he had very strong political views, like that was kind of his show. And I was like, man, like you have such strong views. And he goes, yeah, but I'm around so much culture and so much freedom, because like, yeah, that can be taken with a grain of salt too. But in Florida, he goes, I'm around so many people that don't seem like they're being suppressed, don't seem like they're being told what to do, what they can and can't do. They're being free. And he goes, yeah, they tend to go party and do whatever, and it gets shown in a bad light. But he goes, it's people truly not trying to sit there and like snitch on other people, you know, try and get them in trouble, try and feed off this weird conflict energy that it seems like everyone in the world now is trying to find in another place. They're like, oh, my neighbor's doing this. Well, they're not following pop. I'm worried about my life and I'm trying to have fun, which I think in the grand aspect, that's what a lot of things should be.
Yeah. And a large part of it is that Florida does have, as you say, a very diverse population. And that's not just in terms of ethnic or any of that type of stuff, but in terms of age as well. You know, we have a very old population because we get all of your grandparents, and they're lovely. We love them. We love having them, and we try to treat them with as much respect as they would like for us to. But I know that it doesn't always happen that way, because, you know, I've heard a lot of stories out of South Florida about nursing homes and things like that, which, you know, that's one of the things that you have to think about is, you know, when you send people to you know, facilities and stuff, like, how often are you going to be coming in a visit? Because loneliness is starting to become a really huge thing. And it doesn't just affect young people, but it also affects the old people too.
I can give you a perfect example, ready? So when where I live, like where I was born and raised, is kind of like Ocean City, but also there's a place in there called Ocean Pines, which is at the initial start of why it was created was like a retirement community. It was a bunch of elderly people. And then when my family moved in, it was like lower middle class people, eventually turned into like a single mom that would have a bunch of kids. And that was like very, very rare. There was like 1, 2, 3, 4 littered out throughout the whole entire, like miles and miles of this. I mean, old folks home. I mean, not old folks home, but old person home, old person home, old person home. Like we lived on a golf course and that's how it started. And they would be so protective. Like I remember my neighbor used to be so protective over her grass. She would like water it every single day. And when you stepped on it, she would lose her shit. And eventually these, like, it was like you're filled with crazy old people. It wasn't that they were crazy. It was that they were trying to relax and live this life of luxury. And then you would see like, not really a different culture, but a different class come in. And that's when it would seem as like they would need to protect it. But which was interesting was where it's at now, about 20 something years into the future of when I first initially lived here. It's now mostly single moms, single parents that are living with their kids. And there's not a whole lot of old people around here anymore. Where the community kind of has changed and they kind of went on to something else, but it really shows like the initial stages, the overreactions people talk about, like, oh, that Florida, you said we get all the grandparents. It's a leisure state. It's a place where you want to go to have a vacation, live on the beach. You know, I live in a beach town. Everyone thinks it's just retired old people here. Then they get here and they're like, this is nothing like what I thought it was. It's like, no shit. We live on the beach. Old people aren't the only ones limited to the beach.
There are people who have to, who are taking care of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, there's a whole enterprise and infrastructure that has to exist in order for them to be here and live here. And that's a large issue that a lot of people don't think about, you know. It is something that does affect me, especially at this time of year. Now pulling at a little bit heartstrings a little bit here, you know, because I'm going through a lot of religious related stuff, and Easter is very important to me now, more than it ever has been. But yeah, both my grandmother passed away on Good Friday back in 2015, and my grandfather passed away 3 years later on Easter. And so that's why things like this are on my mind right now.
It's got to be very hard to try and become who you think that they want you to be when everyone has this idea, just because you're from this place, this is who you are. Like, I feel like a lot of people are trying to find themselves, not only in Florida, but in Maryland and everywhere in the world. We're all trying to find out who we are, but we're constantly being told of what we are or who are we. It's like, no, you don't know me. You know, you don't know what I've been through. You don't know what I'm trying to aspire to be. You don't know what my passions, my thoughts, any of that. And that's the kind of the point of this podcast, was to try and talk to people and, you know, have these conversations, have these exchange of ideas, these camaraderies, because I would just have a distorted perceptive of who you were based on the things I know about your state. And it's like, that's not right. That's not any way to judge somebody.
I agree. And that's how I've lived my life. You know, that's part of the reason why I moved back to Tallahassee after I graduated from Miami. I realized how superficial life in a city can be, and how living in a city actually makes you a lot lonelier than living in a small town being picked on people.
Think that through. you live in a place like a city, for instance, you would think that, oh my God, you're around so many people, you must talk to so many people every day. But it realized you actually isolate yourself more because you are trying to find the private time, all these types of things. When you look at rural areas, those people are surrounded by private time and they're trying to find public community time. But if you live in a city, you're so surrounded by community, you don't want anything to do with it because it's just being thrown at you. It's like if you lessen it, people are more attracted to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's also a really interesting thing about Tallahassee is that we're a blue dot in a sea of red. And so I live in a different aspect of North Florida than what is stereotypical. The people here, we are very environmentally conscious. And so far as I recall, we've never voted Republican in our entire history. But that's, you know, we all know what the Democrats were back in the 60s and before. So that's not to say that it's necessarily like the most rosy of the thing of the pictures that we can possibly put ourselves in. But Tallahassee is one of the cradles of the civil rights era and the civil rights movement. And that's something that people don't know, is that, you know, the lunchtime riots did take place in Tallahassee, and they were, and the lunchtime sit-ins that they had and the bus boycotts that they had in Alabama were in part inspired by civil rights actions that happened in Florida prior to the events that took place in Alabama, something that people also don't really know. Also, another thing, our governor, Leroy Collins, who, you know, is from Tallahassee, there was at the time contention whether or not it was going to be LBJ for JFK's vice president or our governor Leroy Collins because of his actions during the civil rights era and how he united Florida in a way that was unprecedented. And JFK, as we know, ended up choosing LBJ instead of Leroy Collins. But, you know, there's a lot about Florida, like you said, that we just don't really know because we haven't taken the time to actually look at it.
What would you say is probably an episode you focused on during your podcast that was like probably the most, I would say, hardest one to go through?
I don't know. I think that I've been through a lot in my life. And that I think that I've experienced so much just in my own personal life that I don't really get as very emotionally affected by a lot of the stuff that I see these days. It doesn't really surprise me. And I think that a large part of the misunderstandings that we have is due to the fact that it's not just the media, it's the fact that there are inconsistencies also in the science community as well. You know, a big aspect about life in the South is state rivalries that, you know, that you also get in the Midwest with college towns and different things like that. And so if somebody says, oh, well, University of Florida, you know, put out this new study or whatever, then, you know, the University of Florida's rivals will then say, oh, well, that's just a UF study. They don't know what they're talking about. So they use their football rivalries as a way to diminish, you know, scientific advances of other universities instead of like actually working together and collaborating together. Like, these sports teams' rivalries are actually doing more of a disservice for the academic community than they might actually think it does.
I didn't really realize the pressure that gets put on academics. I actually put a tweet up about it. I was like, people.
And that's also a difference with private schools too, because the private institutions are saying, oh, the schools in Florida are all state schools except for University of Miami. So they don't know what they're talking about because they're all state schools. So there's a bunch of different levels of different types of what I call matrices of different types of competition. And then within them, you have like these inconsistencies, like, you know, like for instance, the geological time scale, as far as, you know, they said that they say biologically, which I believe to be true, humans have been around for 3.5 million years. Okay. Genetically identical humans to us, they say, based on DNA or whatever that they found. Fine. We'll take that at face value. Well, they're also saying that we've only been civilized though for the last 10 to 6,000 years, you know, like since the last ice age. That to me doesn't equate.
Well, you notice that none of this stuff is going to be
equal to us.
Well, none of this is going to be researched into because of the fact of like, what really pisses me off is the fact that now we're disabling science or we're disabling research based on if it's going to affect somebody's feelings. And I'm like, I get it. Be whoever you want to be, but I would try to get close to some answers or trying to understand some things too. Nobody questions diet trends, but everyone questions the aspect of like space, time, and all these other things that none of us can really see unless we're researching it on a daily basis. That's where I get pissed off is when I found out that PhDs, for instance, people that are writing theses, they have to do these things every couple of years or whenever, maybe 10, 15 years later, protect their theses that they wrote on. They have to try and protect the research that they spent time invested into. And I'm like, is it constantly on the chopping block? Like, fuck, do I go vegan? Do I go primal? Do I go whatever? I'm like, dude, I would like to know, you know, where are we going to be in the next 10, 15 years? Because at this rate, I'm like, we're shooting ourselves in the foot over a lot of dumb shit.
We are. I see ourselves in a better place in 10 years. I'm an optimistic person. I think that a lot of stuff that's going on right now can be explained. I coined an art movement that's starting to become really big and mainstream. Osceola County is calling it the new urban conservative, the new urban contemporary conservative, the new urban contemporary. And it's based on a lot of different things that have been going on in my life and the different aspects that, yeah, I've been going through a lot of personal growth out of emotional abuse and narcissistic abuse of relationships. And my growth out of that has allowed me to see, you know, the aspects of mainstream media that are very narcissistically abusive, and the aspects of a bunch of other different things in my life that I see. And the political sphere is one of them, about how they utilize media to triangulate the nation in a way, because the Democrats are only going to be watching their news channel, and the Republicans are only going to watch their news channel. And as such, they're able to manipulate the population because nobody's going to be looking at both of them. And they try to make it that way so that they can keep their agenda working for them and for corporate interests. And
so here's a simple example of that is like, imagine if I started this podcast with you on it, instead of saying how I just introduced us in the beginning, if I were to say, I'm here with George. George is an expert in Florida history and also researches other things about cultural variations and just use a bunch of large fucking words. People are not going to look that up. People are going to take it at face value from when they heard it. And here's the issue is that creates programming, that creates a type of thinking, and that makes you start basing assumptions and starts this whole entire rabbit hole of creating a story into your head. I had a podcast I was going to do with a past guest, and she was a welder. And I was going to say, I'm going to introduce you in this bit style thing. And she's like, what do you mean? I'm like, for people that haven't heard you in the past, I'm just going to say you're a fabricator of metal statistics and just start saying a bunch of random shit that if you really take it, it doesn't make sense. And I want you to go with it. And she's like, I don't know. I'm not really good at bits. And I'm like, just do it. And then next thing you know, it would create this program into your head, much like when the news does. Nobody ever wants to get another opinion on something that doesn't agree with what they are standing in. And I'm like, to be conformed to one way of thinking is the dumbest possibility. Like, the reason I'm not religious is because I tell people I have no clue. I think everyone's got belief in it. Everyone's got truth in it. And I'll never discern anybody for having a belief in anything, because I think you have your own perspective on shit. And I'm like, that's all the world needs, is to look at someone else's thoughts. You don't have to agree. You don't have to disagree. Just understand why they have them. When you start dismissing somebody's thoughts, somebody's morals, somebody's standings, you start associating yourself as being better than them. And that's where I have an issue, is I think that we're all on the same exact level. And Elon Musk is as simple as a homeless man on the street. It's an aspect of, you might have more items, but you are both the same value in the eyes of whatever is out there. In the eyes of the world, for instance, you are the same exact value. You don't do any better and you don't do any worse. You are the same exact thing. And I just want everyone to kind of come to the table clean on that aspect. But a lot of people want to associate as, I'm better than you. I have more money than you. I have a better car than you. And I'm like, why are we comparing things? I'm rich in value when it comes to just caring. You're not, you're heartless. I would consider that worthless. And they're like, but I got a Bugatti, I can be heartless.
Yeah, there's a lot that's been going on with society. And most of my life I've been in your boat. That I honestly didn't really have the answers, and I still don't really have the answers. And you know, I've never been really very religious all of my life. It's only been since my grandparents have passed away that I've actually had this type of a, you know, a little bit of a transformation. But, you know, each person has their own journey. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of, like, people aren't paying attention to each other. Like what you were saying, people aren't paying attention to each other, whether or not they want to or whether or not they care to. And sometimes they might be intentionally not paying attention to somebody because they don't want to, or because it makes them, you know, and forces them to confront an inconvenient truth. And it forces them to, you know, perhaps take a fault for something that they didn't do or that they didn't necessarily have any part in, but, you know, ultimately for the sake of, you know, the betterment of the institution, it'd probably be better for them to just step down and, you know, channel their pride, for lack of a better term, I suppose. But I think that there's a lot of stuff that's going on in the world that can be explained through, you know, just corporate interest alone. And so long as we have money influencing our politics, it's going to continue in this type of a behavior. And so I think that we can get corporate money out of politics, then that'll certainly be a start. Because there's no, as far as it is right now, it's seen as a corporation is the same thing as a person. And if you think that, as far as the Supreme Court is concerned, and as far as the Constitution is concerned, if you're starting to think that a corporation is the same thing as a person, I think that that starts to get a little bit scary. And then when you talk about the stuff like the Patriot Act, and, you know, like privacy intrusion of our privacy rights and like going through our data to like get these, you know, specific algorithms to, and the algorithms are real. The algorithms are totally real. And an example of this is that, you know, like there is one point and I don't even remember which primary it was. I think there was this recent one. And yeah, I had said on Twitter, I was like, you know, it's starting to seem like the Democrats are getting one version of the story and the Republicans are getting a completely different version of the story. And I was like, this is nuts. I don't, you know, it's like, I'm tired of like living in this like fake world, because I noticed that one side, like that the Republican side just got completely shut out of my algorithm, you know, because I try to stay balanced. That's my approach. You know, I never take, you know, one person's word for it. I listen to a bunch of people and I formulate my opinion based on what seems to be, you know, the golden mean as far, and as a part of my art movement. The golden mean is called eudaimonia. It's part of Aristotle's Nicomachean Ethics, and it's a principle that of ethics, that it's just a very basic principle of ethics that Greeks all know, because yeah, it comes from us. I think it's something that we learn as, you know, as we grow up from our grandparents. It's something that they teach us.
I think the digital deal aspect of things, I think people, they're now becoming more aware of it, but I still think it's not really presiding a lot of change when it comes to the aspect of like, people are still going to want to use their cell phones. People are still going to want to use technology to be able to help them. I just want them to be very, very cautious of where this line proceeds forward, because if you totally choose to neglect it, it'll keep pushing that boundary farther and farther until it hits some things that you don't want it to touch, you know? And I think when there's this old saying of protect your own, or protect, you know, protect the things around you, protect the people you love, I think more community extends that umbrella from not just the people in your family, like the idea kind of sets in your head, but it protects it to the people in your town, the people in your state, the people of the world. You know, you're supposed to have compassion with people. And sadly, that gets neglected when you choose to isolate yourself. You know, I think there's a grand aspect to conversation with people, community aspects of caring about other people, no matter who they are, no matter where they're from. But sadly, when it revolves around what the world is like today, it turns into a game. There's got to be a clear winner and a clear loser.
Yeah. And that's the sad truth of it, is that often that is exactly the way that it ends up being, is that there has to be a clear winner and there has to be a clear loser. And that's also a large aspect of the art movement, is that I saw this inherent duality that's forming in our society, of there has to be the winner and there has to be the loser. I don't believe, you know, one of the things that I've been working on is that I've kind of learned that as I've been going through my catechism classes for Greek Orthodoxy, I've learned that when the Greek Orthodox Church formed, that they kind of, you know, the Greek gods, there was a pantheon. And so in order to form a monotheistic religion, what they did was they pretty much like picked, you know, the different gods, and they kind of melded all the ideas into one. And the first idea that they used was this Manichaeist from India, Manichaeism, this religion of light. And that's where the Pharisees, that's what they're, you know, anything that you hear about the Pharisees, it's this religion of light. And it's a dualistic religion. It's a religion of light and darkness. And that's where you get the apocryphal texts of, you know, the Book of Enoch and those types of books. my art movement is called Neo-Baroque because the Book of Baruch is also one of these apocryphal texts. And I don't necessarily believe in the devil. I think that that's just kind of something that was kind of created because people like to have
a symbol or something to go
against. Yeah, you know, like an opposite to God. But I believe that the opposite to God is absolutely nothing, like a void.
Yeah.
You know, like the space void.
If you were going to ask me what I most likely think in the aspect of religion of what is possible, I like to think of the four horsemen. I don't think there are actually four people on a horse, but I believe that there's these evil types of emotions or these things that I like to correlate with how that's the devil to me, is like evil emotions, you know, things that people experience of like sacrificing somebody else's joy to be able to improve your own is a type of evil in my mind. That's the devil in my mind. And people say, well, just manifest it into one. I'm like, well, I want to manifest it into many things because it extends the boundary of just one thing. It extends the boundaries of, there's a bunch of different things, and people want to get specifications of stuff, but then people don't want specifications on things that they don't want specifications on. I'm like, well, you can pick and choose, but this is also my own brain. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And that's actually where the word demon comes from. It's actually daemon. That's the Greek word, and the word for the golden mean, eudaimonia, right? So it's actually the goodness of the demon, right? That's kind of like the way that it's all put, the light of the demon. So it's kind of like the midway between the two, the eudaimonia. So that's the whole idea of the art movement, as to it's not all white and it's not all black. There's the gray area in between, and we need to narrow it down to what the new middle is, because the middle, as far as what it was when we were kids, is not in the middle anymore. We're entering into what I would say is the age of Aquarius. We're going from water, the age of Pisces, to air, the age of Aquarius. So if you think of the ways that water can become air, boiling, or through synthesis, or through a tree, and then it becomes air through biological process, or as steam. There are different ways that it can become air. And I see that type of thing playing out, is that, you know, all of these wars, that's boiling, right? Or, you know, these different types of aspects of the things that we're doing to our environment. It's kind of the opposite of everything that we need to be doing. And if we start taking care of this earth as if this were the paradise, as if this were heaven, because that's what's in the Lord's Prayer, is on earth as it is in heaven. And so when you think about treating the earth as it is as it is in heaven, you would want to treat heaven the best as it can possibly be. You wouldn't want to destroy it, and you wouldn't want to pollute it, and you certainly wouldn't want to hinder anything that would work in that direction. And I think that that's part of what we've been seeing has been very successful here in Florida, as far as bipartisanship. You know, since I moved back to Tallahassee, I've been a very vocal environmentalist, and I've been very forward in my environmental agenda. And as such, you know, that's something that I do give Ron DeSantis very his due credit for, is that, you know, as opposed to Rick Scott, who dismantled a lot of water regulations and a lot of, like, he really did a lot of state as far as environment is concerned. Ron DeSantis, on the other hand, sees that there, you know, that there's promise in conserving our environment, that, you know, conservatism does include conserving the environment. And I think that that is the revolution that we're starting to see, as we're now starting to see Republicans starting to care more about the environment in Florida. I'm not going to say that, you know, like, that it's the same in Texas and South Dakota and Wyoming. They're still pushing for pipelines and all that stuff because that's what employs the people in their state. So they're going to keep fighting for it. But the thing is that they're going to keep fighting for it because they don't have an alternative. If you give them an alternative, and if you train them for that alternative before you take that away from them, that's the problem that they're seeing right now, is that, you know, those Western states, I call them the square states because they're all square. But those square states, they all the people who are employed as far as constructing the pipeline and everything, those are all people who are employed in those small towns in those places that wouldn't get that money otherwise. And so we need to figure out a way to be able to replace that employment with something before you take it away. And that's why they had that response to Joe Biden taking away the pipeline and an executive action the way that he did. That's why they did that. It wasn't necessarily because, as far as I'm concerned, it doesn't appear to be necessarily because of the fact that they want a pipeline per se. It's just the fact that the pipeline is actually employing their people and they need something to employ their people.
George, we've kind of hit every topic a lot of people tend to stay away from. That's slavery, that's religion, that's politics. Where can people find your podcast at, man? And also, if you have any links to some of your movements that you're, or just things that maybe people can help get out there as well too.
Yeah. Well, you can find my podcast on Spotify or iTunes. It's the Florida Podcast, the Florida Podcast. And you can find me on Twitter. Right now, my Twitter account is pretty much the most active that I'm doing right now because I'm pursuing copyright stuff right now, and I'm not going to be releasing anything until I get that squared away, because there's a lot of stuff that's going on as far as people hacking into my accounts, and I want to make sure that everything is legally mine and that I can pursue somebody for, you know, copyright infringement. But my art movement is open to everybody. You know, if you look at the under hashtags and it's Neo Baroque or Matrix Theory of Light, you will see what's going on and you'll understand exactly what it is. And it's started, you know, advancing science in a lot of different directions. We're going to start seeing a lot of holograms soon, and it's going to be really cool. The Age of Aquarius is going to be fun.
Well, I'll make sure I link it all in the description, George. And thanks for listening to this episode of Out of the Blank Podcast.